Welcome to the College Baseball Nation podcast. My name is John Peters, and I'm here with Kyle McKelvey. This week, we're looking back at the weekend's games, talking about the Pac-12's great weekend, and looking forward to next week with a pick'em. Let's talk college baseball. Kyle, welcome back to the podcast. How's it going?
Doing well. I'm slowly recovering from a hard day of work on Saturday. I helped a friend of ours put concrete on his shed area. They're building a shed in the backyard, and so we just mixed concrete all day, and we poured it all in there. It took a lot of work. We lifted and mixed and 80-pound bags of concrete for 4 hours. I'm still sore.
We get it. You're strong.
It wasn't just me.
That sounds like weekend time that could have been spent watching college baseball. That's pretty much all I did over the weekend.
That's a better activity. And you played with your new dog.
Yes. Yes. Omaha is adjusting to life with us. Still no progress with him and the cat, though. So we'll see how. We'll keep you updated on whether or not they become best friends, because that's the goal.
Yeah, that is a good goal. Ours don't like each other yet. Probably won't.
Let's hop into it. We have a brand new top 50 brought to you by Press Sports. At number one, staying up there, is Arkansas. They had a perfect week. No reason to move them. Same with number two, Vanderbilt. They went 3-0 against University of Illinois Chicago. Up one spot, Mississippi State. Following them at number four is Georgia Tech. They won 2 out of 3 at home against Louisville. Number five, Ole Miss. Number six, Miami, bouncing back from a week one in the ACC series loss to win this week. Number seven, Florida. Louisville drops down to 8 after that road series loss to Georgia Tech. TCU at 9 after a pretty good weekend at the Shriners College Classic, and number 10, East Carolina. So that's the top 10, Kyle. Who else stands out to you?
Virginia Tech making their way up. They are number 18. Number 18 in our rankings after beating UNC. Was that at Virginia Tech? I think it was.
Yep, that one's a home series. They won the first two games, and then North Carolina squeaked out game 3, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, that was a good one. And they're right above Virginia, who lost a series at home or at Florida State. That's not too bad. So we only dropped them from 15. You're expected to lose road series in the ACC against quality competition like that. So that's not too bad. But Virginia Tech, we're really happy to see them up there that high. It's kind of fun to introduce some new blood into the ACC play.
Yeah, so we also have Arizona at number 13. They had a 4-0 weekend in Frisco. They absolutely crushed the competition. Just offensively incredible. I was looking up their number one in a whole bunch of offensive stats right now, including walks and triples and runs and top 10 or 15 in batting average. So we knew they were going to hit, and they came down to Texas and knocked off Oklahoma twice, Missouri, Dallas Baptist. Good weekend for them. Boston College at 14, they went on the road, won a series at Auburn. We'll get back to that later. A couple other notable things. Oregon comes in at 29. This is the first time in program history they've made it into the College Baseball Nation top 50. Go Ducks. We also have joining the top 50, Stanford at number 41. They had a 4-0 weekend. Joining as well, 48, Southern Illinois. They are 11-0. Michigan pops back in at 49, and Ball State pops back in at 50, taking 2 out of 3 at Kentucky. That's our top 50. You can find the rest of it on our website at collegebaseball.info. But as always, it's a fun challenge for us. I think we're starting to get things a little bit more figured out as time passes on. Let's take a look back now at some of the big series from last weekend. We've alluded to a few of them. So we picked five of the top series from the last weekend last week. And, you know, Kyle, you won the first two. And this one, I was feeling really good about this pick'em going into Sunday. I thought there was no way I would lose. And it looks like you took this one 3-2.
I was feeling a little bit worried for my streak. But yeah, we had some pretty clear results. Like some in the past, sometimes it's been neither team or neither of us picked the exact right series record. But this time we got all five exactly right. Just, I didn't pick the right ones. But yeah, this was an exciting victory for the McKelvey household. We celebrated all day on Sunday.
This is turning into like one of those T-ball games where they just stop keeping score because it's getting too embarrassing and they just want the kids to have fun. Right now, you're 3-0 to start the year against me. You know, pretty soon we'll just be handing out orange slices and participation trophies instead.
That's fine with me.
All right, so the big series of the week was a top 10 matchup. Louisville was number 3 heading into the weekend. At Georgia Tech, number 7. They basically switched places after the weekend, and that's because Georgia Tech won 2 out of 3. You got that one right. I had the Cardinals taking 2 out of 3. They nearly did it. It was a really interesting series. So in some, 66 runs were scored in that series. So definitely offensive bias. A little bit of shaky defense at times from Louisville too, which contributed to some of Georgia Tech's runs. I think some of the major storylines, the Cardinals were without their Friday night starter for back-to-back weeks. Glenn Albanese was missing from the weekend rotation. And I mean, that's definitely something that you saw that was that Louisville could have benefited from a little bit of extra pitching. Luke Smith, their Sunday starter, had a pretty poor start. He didn't get out of the third inning. Kyle, you were talking about it earlier. There's really only a handful of good starts in this series from starting pitching.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are only two good starts that we noticed where pitcher got a quality start, which is six or more innings and three or fewer earned runs. But otherwise, it was just an offensive masterpiece by both teams. Like Georgia Tech scored 6 runs, 13 runs, and 19 runs. That's just an insane weekend. And like, if you said that they would have scored 6 runs on Friday, I would have been like, oh yeah, they won that game. But nope, Louisville scored 13.
And they did it in like a really like traditional Louisville way. In the first few innings, everyone had reached base and they had 5 stolen bases. They had a double steal. They just had that like grinded out Louisville, like, wear you down piece by piece mentality that Louisville and Dan McDonald is kind of famous for at this point. Not necessarily as many superstars, but 1 through 9, they can really get to you. And that starting off the weekend, I saw that, I was like, if this is what Louisville's offense, like if this is what they've brought down to Atlanta, like this, they're winning the series easy. But credit to Georgia Tech for outslugging them, really, is the long and the short of it.
Yeah, for real. I mean, it was just kind of some sloppy pitching overall, or just, you could say, just good hitting on the whole weekend. There were some free bases given up, but really not as much as you'd expect in several double-digit run games.
Yeah, I think my favorite individual performance from the weekend is probably freshman phenom Kevin Parada of Georgia Tech. He entered into the weekend with a 440 average, and you got to think that when you enter into the weekend going against Louisville, your average is going to drop from 440, and it went up 46 points. So coming out of the weekend, he's batting 486. He had a 4-for-4 game on Saturday with a double. He was on base a total of 8 times in the weekend. Is really coming into his own as a freshman in ACC play already. I mean, he's already producing at a level that I didn't necessarily think he would get to so quickly. So pretty impressive for Kevin Parada.
For sure, yes.
But I think at the end of this all, you know, winning or losing a weekend series on the road at Georgia Tech wasn't the worst thing that could have happened to Louisville. Georgia Tech has now won over a dozen straight ACC series. It's been, I think, since March of 2019, I think, since they last lost an ACC series, something like that. Georgia Tech is tough to beat in Atlanta. And, you know, the question we had going into last weekend was, is anyone going to challenge Louisville at the top of the ACC? And the answer is yes. We found the main competition. I think that moving forward, Georgia Tech has set themselves in the pole position in the ACC.
Yeah, Georgia Tech is our team, I think, to probably win the ACC now. They're starting off on a good note with sweeping the first series and winning 2 out of 3 this one. That helps get on the right foot for ACC play going forward.
Yeah, starting 4 games above 500 in conference, like that's they can go 500 the rest of the way and still be an easy tournament team. So, you know, that's pretty good start for Georgia Tech. So let's hop on now to the next series. So this one, we both picked the winner, but you got the exact series score. I had Miami beating NC State in a sweep. You had Miami taking 2 out of 3. You were correct on this one. The games were like fairly competitive games. I think that like leaving the weekend, I feel pretty good about NC State and pretty good about Miami. And after the weekend, now NC State's moved to 1-5 in the ACC. I think we both agree they're better than that record. And I'd be pretty surprised if they don't bounce back from that. The kind of nail in the coffin for NC State was in the rubber match here when Miami hit 3 straight home runs to take the lead. They had Anthony Villar, Yohandy Morales, and Adrian Del Castillo come in and just get 5 runs on 3 straight home runs. Just totally deflated NC State. Yohandy Morales had another home run in that game. He's another one of the standout ACC freshmen. That was kind of, I mean, it was pretty deflating for NC State. And they come out of this weekend with a series loss.
Yeah, it's not doom and gloom for NC State yet, I don't think. Maybe if they lose the next one, it might be. But they're still okay. They have chances to prove us wrong and prove all the doubters wrong, essentially, going forward here. I was trying to pull up their schedule. I think NC State, they're still a good team. They just kind of got lit up a little bit in that one inning. If they just had stopped one of those home runs, it would have been a little bit closer.
Yeah, it's amazing that just a few at-bats in a row just changed the whole weekend for them. Their next 7 games are all pretty tough. So they have 3 out at Duke, and then they go to Coastal. Following that up, they host Louisville in 3 games. So they're going to have to right the ship in a hurry. I think just on paper, NC State heading into Duke, I would pick Duke probably to win 2 out of 3 of those if I had to right now. So, you know, if that's true, if they start 1 or 2 and 7 or something like that in ACC play, and then they had Louisville coming into town the next week. You know, I don't know, like they're behind the 8 ball at this point, but this weekend will be big. I think they for sure have a shot going into Durham. I think they can win or into.
Yeah. Durham.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I was looking at their schedule and I was thinking they could win some of these, but all of these teams are ranked for us, but that just means that we have every ACC team ranked, which is in the top 50, which is just crazy. I don't know if we mentioned that.
No, yeah, I meant to mention that before. We have 14 out of 14 ACC teams ranked. That's never happened before. Last week we had all but one. So now we have all 14 ranked. It's a bloodbath. I think that the depth in the ACC is just absolutely ridiculous. Yeah, if you end up as 12th or 13th best in the ACC, you might be in the top 50, but you might really have some losses piled on.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of been like like Tennessee and Kentucky's RPI the last 5 or 6 years. Just they're really good in the RPI, but they're well under 500 in their own conference. But we think they're still a good team.
Definitely will be interesting to see what they do with the next few weekends. Not quite ready to write the Wolfpack off yet, but compared to what a couple of years ago when they started the year 19-0 or something, this is, you know, a little bit different story for them. The next series I got on the nose perfectly right. 3-0.
How'd you have one?
Tennessee over Georgia State. I think you've been drinking too much of the Georgia State Kool-Aid. You had Tennessee winning 2 out of 3, so I mean, credit to you. You didn't quite pick Georgia State to win this series, but like the long and the short of this is Tennessee dominated Georgia State. They outscored them 18-2. The pitching has always been there for Tennessee. I think the biggest question mark, in my opinion, is the offense. They scored 21 and 14 against Arkansas Pine Bluff earlier this year, but besides that, they haven't scored more than 7 runs in a game. And their 2 losses, which are a couple weekends ago now to Indiana State, they scored 1 and 5 runs. So like when the pitching is there, they're pretty dominant, and they can do what they did to Georgia State, outscoring them 18-2. But it's definitely kind of one of those instances of pitching is going to have to keep them in it. And it did this weekend. And I think this pitching staff can carry them a long way.
Yeah, they're 5th in the country and walks allowed per 9 innings, 2nd in their own conference. So yeah, the Tennessee pitching staff is pretty consistent, at least. I mean, I want to see them do it against other conference opponents. But yeah, if you can do it against a team who's beaten Georgia Tech and Georgia once. Yeah. No, not Georgia. Georgia Tech, though. Yeah, I think this Tennessee staff can push Tennessee up the ladder in the SEC East, kind of from where we expected going into the season.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see how, you know, a team like South Carolina and them end up at the end of the year. I think South Carolina's offense has been really impressive. Tennessee's pitching staff's been impressive. South Carolina's had some good pitching in their own right. But outside of, I think, in the SEC, it really feels like there's kind of a top tier. And in the East in particular, Florida and Vanderbilt are kind of on their own class right now. And in the West, Arkansas, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, kind of that top 5 in the SEC feels, at least currently, is kind of in its own elite class. Like those are teams that I feel really good about making the postseason, being regional hosts, things like that. But I mean, this Tennessee team could be a team that breaks into that tier, host a regional. If they're pitching continues to be as elite as it has been, and they can get just enough offense like they've been doing, I mean, there's what's not to like.
Yeah, I think they could end up being a host. They'd be kind of in that 14 to 16 range somewhere. But yeah, they need to see some more offense, but still pretty high on this team.
Yeah, they don't give up a lot of walks. And then over the weekend, they only had 1 error. So, I mean, when you don't give up walks and you don't have errors, like, you're going to win a lot of games. So, I mean,
yeah, eliminate those free bases.
Yeah. So, that was one I got right. Let's keep it rolling. Another one I got right was Texas going to Houston. I had the Longhorns winning 2 out of 3. You had the Cougars taking 2 out of 3 at home. Longhorns did squeak this one out. It was a pretty entertaining series. I don't know if you caught much of it. I watched the Friday night game, and Ty Madden was electric. 9 inning, complete game shutout through a 2-hitter. It was a game where it was total pitcher's duel. Longhorns won it 1-0. Ty Madden showed why we think he's a first-round pick. I mean, that's the headline right there. He threw the first complete game shutout for Texas in 4 years. Which that was kind of surprising. Yeah, I thought, you know, with Texas's pitching over the years, that was something that stood out to me, that it's been 4 years since they've done that. And I think after obviously a weak start with the 0-3 college baseball showdown, Texas is kind of right of the ship going on the road to winning a series at Houston. That's something that to be proud of. And it's something that I think was important because now this weekend they're going to be hosting South Carolina at home. So, I mean, it's only going to get tougher for them.
Yeah, for sure. And we still need to see more out of their offense. They did score, end up scoring 8 runs on Sunday, and they did it a pretty efficient way. But they scored 1 run on Friday, 2 runs on Saturday. That's, I mean, I think they in a loss on Saturday, so 3-2. It was a walk-off in extras. So close games, both of those. But Sunday run day, they kind of blew them out.
Houston ran out of pitching a little bit, it looked like.
Yeah. I mean, we really like Texas's pitching staff. They're a solid and deep bunch, but they'll get a chance against some pretty good arms in South Carolina this weekend in Austin.
Yeah, that one's going to be definitely a really interesting series. Also worth noting was that the Longhorns are without Pete Hansen, who should be one of their starters at some point. He's only thrown a total of 6 1/3 innings this year and has looked pretty solid while he's been out there. Only given up 2 earned runs in that 6 1/3, but he was unavailable for the weekend. So it'll be interesting to see if he's back against South Carolina, because that's an arm that the Longhorns, you know, kind of coming into the season thought they would be relying upon. All right, last series that we had was Stanford and San Francisco. We're doing a 2-home, 2-away 4-game series. I had the Cardinal taking 3 out of 4. You had a 4-game sweep. And we'll get to it later, but 4-game sweep was kind of the theme of the weekend. And Stanford did come away with a 4-game sweep and did so in offensive fashion, which anyone who knows like West Coast baseball and knows Stanford baseball, you kind of think of pitching first, offense optional. And at this point, Stanford is 12th in the country in home runs per game, 1 3/4 home runs per game. They've hit, I think, 14 home runs in 8 games, something like that. That math probably checks out. The storyline from this one was Game 4. This one was one I was just checking on my phone, keeping an eye on. Because it was Sunday, and if San Francisco won, I would have won the pick 'em, but then Stanford won. So I was hoping that this one would go San Francisco's way in the end. But I saw Stanford was up 11-0 after 3 innings or 3.5 innings, and I was like, Kyle has this in the bag, there's no hope for me. Bottom of the 4th inning, San Francisco scores 11 runs, ties it up 11-11. Stanford comes back and wins 15-13. That's not a game Stanford wins last year. Stanford offense has not been the type that can outslug a team. So this is a kind of a new look Stanford.
Yeah, I mean, Stanford is not one of those teams that would have been up 11-0 in the first 3 innings, but they also wouldn't have let up the 11 runs in 1 inning. Yeah. So it's more offensive, but I mean, it's just the theme of the year. There've been several double-digit games.
Yeah, I've only really had the chance to look at Brandon Beck, the Friday night starter. And, I mean, he's a prospect. He's a guy that is going to get drafted and is a good anchor on Friday night. But, I haven't had a chance to look too much deeper in their pitching staff. And I think we won't really get a better feel for them until a little bit deeper into their schedule. They have 4 games against Irvine, and then they start Pac-12 playoff with Utah at Washington State, which both of those should be winnable series for Stanford. At Washington State might be a little tricky, but April 9th, UCLA is coming into town, and that hopefully is a series that I will be able to attend in person and see Pettway from UCLA go up against Beck from Stanford. So that hopefully will be a really nice pitcher's duel.
Are they allowing fans, or are you trying to be media?
Starting April 1st, California is allowing fans, so awesome. I can start going to baseball games, which is great. I've been stuck at home on weekends, not being able to get into games, so excited to be able to go to the ballpark.
That's exciting. I'm going to my first game this weekend, and I'm hosting Samford, not Stanford. It'll be fun.
That one's up in College Station?
It is, yes. I'll be there for my brother's graduation, so just sticking around for a game.
Nice. That's better than a lot of graduations. At least get a baseball game out of it.
Exactly.
All right. So a couple other storylines that we want to talk about from this last week of college baseball. Like, I don't know, Kyle, you sent this to me. Like, Virginia Tech, not only have they won their first two ACC series, but they're doing it with style.
Yes, they got some flair. They have some fun on the sideline, on the right by the dugout. So what happens every time a Virginia Tech batter hits a home run, he comes around the bases and he knows what's waiting for him in the dugout or right outside the dugout. His teammates will get a hammer, like a sledgehammer, a giant sledgehammer from the dugout. And as he's coming, like as he stomps on home plate, he'll bring it to his teammates will bring him the hammer, and he does the Thor like hammer smash just right there in front of on the ground, right in front of his teammates. And it just looks electric.
Yeah, like the whole team like jumps.
Yeah.
Like this is like, you know, make baseball fun again. This is like baseball is fun right here. This is absolutely what we need, especially in college baseball. It is like one of the most entertaining home run celebrations out there right now.
Oh yes. And we'll tweet out the video so you can see it if you missed it over the weekend. But yeah, my favorite one was, I love also watching the players come around after hitting a home run and stomping on home plate. Like this is my home. I love that. And then so this guy does that and then goes to get the hammer and then smashes it while his teammates jump around him. And it just is fantastic. Fantastic entertainment.
I always think of Vanderbilt when I see the home plate stomp, but I mean, this Virginia Tech team has some attitude, has some flair.
That's why they're 18th.
And you know what? I know it might be polarizing, but their maroon, burnt orange, and white socks, I'm a huge fan of. They are amazing. I love the stripes.
So I don't like, for some reason, I don't like the combination of the maroon and burnt orange. I graduated from A&M, so I like the maroon, but it just looks weird with the burnt orange.
See, that's where you're wrong. It's just averting your expectations. You know, you never would think maroon and burnt orange would look good together, but I mean, there it is. It's just a clean look.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to come around to it. Maybe just their baseball uniform. How about that? The football colors need to change, but yeah, let's see.
So also, I think one of the most ridiculous stories sticking in the ACC, Boston College, game 3 at Auburn, down 9-1 in the bottom or top of the ninth inning. It's the rubber match. They split the first two games. Game 1, Boston College blew out Auburn. Game 2, Auburn repaid Boston College with a blowout. Auburn is cruising to a 2-1 series win over a ranked Boston College team. Auburn's feeling really good about it. Down to the last strike. Two outs, top of the ninth inning, two strikes, and a rally begins. Like, blink your eye, and Sal Frelick has hit a three-run home run to tie the game in the top of the ninth. Go to the bottom of the ninth, nothing going for Auburn. Top of the 10th, two-run home run for Boston College. Auburn gets the tying run to the plate. They have a runner on base in the bottom of the 10th. Doesn't pan out. Game over. Boston College stuns Auburn to win the series.
Yeah, and that was just a crazy weekend. I, to be honest, I kind of expected Auburn to to sweep it, but not really dominantly. But they really, Boston College is a really good team. I guess we kind of had talked about it earlier in the preseason, but.
They felt like a team that had like a few prospects, but like maybe didn't have it all together. And I mean, winning their first ACC series, winning on the road at Auburn in a series that like was scheduled like 15 minutes before it started. It was just like both of them had COVID cancellations and they just threw together the series. Boston College was like, yeah, we'll come down to Alabama and play Auburn, you know, flying 1500 miles or whatever it is from New England. And we'll take on Auburn. Sure. Yeah, let's do it. Your house. And that's two out of three.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that I like to see. We saw this a little bit this season in football, and I'm glad it's kind of sticking like that kind of the teams that aren't playing are being able to schedule in a week's notice. That's great. And what, I mean, I do like to see that it was like a competitive series. And I know the games weren't super competitive until that last one, but it was just a pretty balanced series, I think.
Yeah, I mean, what they say, basketball is a game of runs, but this one, I think baseball was, with like the runs just being almost 9 innings apiece for the first bit, where Boston College dominated the first game, Auburn the second, Auburn almost all the third game, and then yep. Boston College just got super hot right at the end. It's something that, you know, we talked just a little bit earlier about with NC State giving up 3 straight home runs to Miami. It's just like a blink of an eye and your whole weekend has changed, right? The 8-run ninth inning for Boston College that turned that series from like, well, you know, that's fine, losing this week, a road series isn't the worst thing to do. They won 2 out of 3 at Auburn, and that's going to mean something if it comes down time to the tournament and they're on the bubble or on the bubble of hosting and they have this road series win at an SEC team. That's meaningful.
Yeah, and this kind of brings my expectations of Auburn down a little bit, to be honest. I mean, I can't bring them down too much because it's still a pretty close series. Like they're one strike away from winning the series and making you think highly of them. But
they were one strike twice. They had two guys that ended up with 2 strikes against.
They pulled the Rangers.
Oh, that's true.
I mean, letting up 10 runs in 2 innings is pretty rough, but being one strike away is still like, that's you can't maybe detract too much from Auburn, but people aren't going to really look at the details when they just see, oh, SEC home or ACC home series loss. Like, I don't know. It'll be harder to think as highly of them going into the bubble talk if they go maybe just slightly under 500 in SEC play.
And if I'm not mistaken, so they were in Round Rock 2 weekends ago. Yeah, had a losing weekend, Auburn. 1-2. And then another 1-2 weekend, back-to-back losing weekends. That's,
yeah, it's not great.
It's not a great look. They get Little Rock at home this weekend before going to Ole Miss to start SEC play. So they're kind of running out of time to right the ship.
Yeah. Do we want to talk about this now? The SEC like not being, or like still being dominant at the top, but maybe the middle was a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's like, it is an interesting thought. Like, so we touched on it earlier, how the top five SEC teams are really good. Kind of goes without saying, we have what the top five SEC teams are all in the top seven. So that we think pretty highly of the SEC. But once you get out of away from number seven, Florida, who personally I think is going to end up higher than seven, but just by the nature of starting the year off with a home loss to Miami, their resume is a little weak right now. So, you know, we'll probably move them up if they keep, I mean, we'll definitely move them up if they keep winning, but not quite ready to do it yet. The next team that we have ranked is a team that I kind of feel like we could have dropped more, but we didn't. So we had LSU at number 5 last week. We dropped them 10 spots to 15 this week. They lost 2 out of 3 against Oral Roberts. And they did it in perplexing manner. So Jaden Hill, the ace of LSU's pitching staff, gave up 8 runs in the first inning, only got 1 out before he was replaced. LSU came back to score 7 runs to make that an 8-7 game before Oral Roberts scored 14 unanswered runs to finish with a football score, 22-7. LSU got the blowout the other direction the next day, and the final game was a close game, but I mean, close games at home against a team with a losing record from the Summit League, that's not what a top contender is supposed to do. So LSU kind of, in our eyes, was a little bit downgraded. To be fair, they do have a ton of freshmen on that team, which I think are only going to get better. So I don't think it's going to be impossible for them to make an Omaha run, but you know, not great. Auburn now with back-to-back losing weekends, not great. I think you said it right. The middle tier is it's a little bit muddier than it maybe it was at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, we had kind of talked earlier in the preseason that the SEC West was a clearly defined 1, 2, 3, and 4 in some order of Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Arkansas, and LSU. And then there was a gap, and then it was Auburn, A&M, Bama in some order. But LSU losing this weekend and just not looking great overall, they're still good, but maybe not looking as dominant as we expect, kind of brings them back to the pack. Maybe it's a clearly defined 1, 2, 3, and then a more muddled 4, 5, 6, 7 with Auburn kind of sliding a little bit there. And Alabama still looks pretty good. So obviously there are still good teams and they still could be one of the better teams in any other conference, but being like fifth in your own conference is, or in your own division is hard to come back from, fifth or sixth, I guess. Like maybe they probably still won't be a host at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Which I don't think we're ready to ascribe that to LSU. I don't know if that's what they're doomed for or anything, but it's maybe more in the cards than it would have been before this. I think, you know, also with kind of the bounce back of A&M this last weekend, they went 3-0 against New Mexico State. Yeah, New Mexico State is not an amazing team, but the way they did it, A&M's pitching staff was absolutely dominant. Bryce Miller threw 15 strikeouts in his start after kind of a shaky week one. So he's kind of right back on track. So you're starting to feel better about that pitching staff, which you kind of knew with Rob Childress, A&M's pitching staff was never going to be too terrible. If they can bring that to SEC play, it's going to be tough to score runs against them. So it's going to be pretty interesting moving forward to see who emerges into the fourth spot in the SEC West.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, A&M's pitching staff is strikeouts like always. They've got their fifth in the country in strikeouts per nine with 13.3, which is insane. That's more than a strikeout an inning, which is that's a really high rate.
The Golden Spikes account right now has picked four nominees for Golden Spikes Performer of the Week, and Bryce Miller and Ty Madden. So Bryce Miller from A&M, Ty Madden from Texas are both on there. So we got a nice little Texas versus A&M Twitter war going on.
Who's winning?
I've only checked right at the beginning, and Ty Madden had like 80% of the vote. But Aggies do best when they come from behind in internet polls. So
exactly.
But one last thing before we get on to next week's pick'em. It would be remiss not to at least mention that Big Ten play started this last weekend. It started in one of the most unique fashions that Big Ten play has ever started. A bunch of games played in South Carolina, a bunch of games played in Round Rock, trying to get out of the weather. Kind of a little bit of status quo. Like the top teams won games. Michigan went 3-1. Indiana went 3-1. Nebraska had a nice weekend going 3-1. Ohio State as well went 3-1. Ohio State did that with Seth Lonsway, their Friday night ace top prospect, getting a little bit roughed up, having some control issues. They ended up still winning that game against Illinois, who is a top half team in the Big Ten. So Ohio State winning 3 out of 4 against Illinois, it's a pretty good start for them. Indiana, made famous by the mashing Grant Richardson, he was batting over 400 with like 5 home runs last year, has already hit 5 hits in this first 4 games, 4 of them extra base hits. So three doubles and a homer. So his OPS is basically 1,000 already. He's looking already like he's in pretty good form. I think it's gonna be a little tough to kind of tease apart who's the best team in the Big Ten for at least a little bit. We do have Indiana and Michigan in our top 50. Those are the same two teams we had at in the preseason top 50, and there was nothing really that happened this weekend that changed my mind about either of those teams too much. They both won 3 out of 4 games. I said that was the last thing before we get on to next week's pick'em, but we have one last topic, and that is the Pac-12. So I think we have been, like many, a little disparaging at times of the Pac-12 because it was easy to look and say UCLA is probably pretty good, and then they go and lose 2 out of 3 at home to San Francisco to start the year, and you're like, well, maybe Arizona, and then they lose 2 out of 4 against Ball State. You're like, Arizona State, even though they lost, you know, Torkelson, and they never quite have had their pitching together, and then they go and have 2 Friday night starters, or sorry, the Friday and Saturday night pitchers get Tommy John. So it's like, you know, who wants to be a contender in the Pac-12? It kind of felt like nobody. But this weekend was, this was a banner week for the Pac-12. The top teams in the conference went a combined 23-0. Which is kind of ridiculous. That's, I mean, that's pretty absurd. UCLA had a 4-0 week. They beat Fullerton twice, Pepperdine. Arizona, like we mentioned, had a 4-0 week, and Round Rock beating Oklahoma, Dallas Baptist, Arizona State had a 4-0 week. Oregon went to UC Santa Barbara and swept them in a 4-game sweep. Stanford, we already mentioned, had a 4-game sweep of San Francisco, and Oregon State swept BYU in 3 games. So, I mean, like, there it is, right? Those are our contenders now. We got them. It feels like that kind of answered a lot of questions in the Pac-12, and hopefully, you know, they don't ruin this, because this is a nice little narrative, I think. Those are teams, maybe Oregon is probably the most surprising team in that, but I don't think too shocking. But that feels like a nice little group of teams in the Pac-12 that's probably rising to the top right now. And depending on how it all shakes out, 4 or 5 of them will probably make the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, this is kind of setting aside a nice top tier. And for the Pac-12's sake, hopefully they beat up on the bottom half and don't just like beat up on each other and then kind of lower everyone's expectations. But if they can beat up on the bottom half and all those teams go do pretty well in conference play, then that could mean, yeah, 4 or 5, maybe even 6 teams. 6 would be a little high in the sky probably, but 5 is possible.
And that's a good point, because I think, was it 2019, that's what the Pac-12 did, where UCLA, Stanford, and Washington all had 20-something wins in the conference, all made it into the NCAA tournament. That was the year, I think, right, Washington, or was it
20? Omaha.
I can't remember, it was 2018 or 19, Washington went to Omaha. Like, that was, it was one of those years where the top few teams in the conference had really clear, kind of clear-cut resumes and got in. And that would benefit the conference as a whole, but knowing the Pac-12, there's going to be some cannibalism and they're going to end up with one bid or something, because it seems like, at least in football, the Pac-12 can never get out of their own way in terms of sending someone to the playoff.
Yeah. I still think that the top is pretty good. I'm not sure about the bottom part, like Cal, USC, Washington. And then kind of Washington State's still pretty good. They're at least kind of fun. I listened to an interview with their head coach this week, and they're still exciting. I know I'm getting pumped up by the head coach, but
yeah, that's dangerous. That's the thing I've learned the most in this, is that the more you listen to head coaches, the more you start believing that every team in the conference is going to win it.
Yeah. I can't do that to myself.
that's their job. I don't think anyone in the Pac-12 has really done anything too terrible besides Utah. Utah's not looking great. But I think, you know, everyone else in the Pac-12, they still have some chances at some non-conference games, and could end up as good enough teams that they won't end up as, like, you know, terrible RPI losses or something like that if come conference play.
That's a good point.
Well, I mean, that's a story that's obviously going to play itself out. Arizona and UCLA match up in the first week of Pac-12 play in a couple of weeks. So, I mean, that's going to answer some questions there. I'm finally getting some clarity, I think, with the Pac-12, which is nice. Let's look ahead. We have 7 series to choose from for our pick'em that we got all tidy up. 6 of them are top 50 matchups. One of them is just a bonus one. So we're going to choose 5 of these. Let's see. Last time you went first. All right. So yeah. I'm going to pick the first series for us. I'm going to go. We were just talking about the Pac-12, and this weekend we have a non-conference matchup between 2 Pac-12 opponents. So this one won't count for the standings, but it still count for the rankings, obviously. Oregon, fresh off their win, a 4-game sweep at UC Santa Barbara, up to 29, is going to go take on number 20 Oregon State, That series is 3 games in Corvallis. Kyle, who do you have winning that series?
That's a non-conference series?
Yeah, they play 6 games against each other this year.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
Yeah, I think in the Pacific Northwest, it's kind of hard to find opponents. Especially,
yeah, that makes sense.
Especially in the COVID year, so they have each other.
Yeah, it's not that far from Eugene to Corvallis. Let's see. It's in Corvallis. Oregon just came off of a really good series win, 4-game series sweep against a team that we really liked. I'm going to go Oregon State 2 out of 3. And I say that, but I still like Oregon. So it's going to be hard. It's hard for me to pick against Oregon in this, after this dominant week they had. But being at home just kind of is just a little bit of an edge for me.
All right. So I can't pick that now. That's what we've settled on.
We've decided, yes.
So Oregon State is currently number 4 in the country in ERA. The earned run average is 1.64. And notably, they've only given up 3 unearned runs. So their defense has done a pretty solid job of not giving up too many runs either. I like the Beavers. If you're taking 2 out of 3, I'm taking Beavers sweep.
Wow. That's a little bit surprising. I thought you were going to go the other way.
You know what? I'm not a huge believer in momentum. I'm almost thinking that Oregon coming off winning 4 games in a row at UC Santa Barbara is going to come back a little too confident and is going to get tripped up by a really good Oregon State team.
So you're a believer in negative momentum?
Yeah, exactly. All right, who you got next for us, Kyle?
Next, there's a few good ways I can go. Only because I want you to make my pick for me in this one. Vandy at Oklahoma State.
I had the same thought process with this one. I was like, well, if he has to pick first, which one of these do I want him to pick first? I don't know. So this is a really fun matchup. So Vanderbilt is going to Oklahoma State, playing in Obrate Stadium. This is the biggest series that Oklahoma State has had in their brand new stadium. Two teams here that are both top 10 in the country in ERA. Vanderbilt sitting at 2.0 on the dot, Oklahoma State 2.1. Oklahoma State is technically undefeated at 9-0-1, which ties are stupid. There are no ties in baseball, but Grand Canyon had a travel curfew, so they tied 4-4 over the weekend.
Their road series? Oh, no, Vin. Okay, got it.
So Vanderbilt does have to take the trip in this one, but I think the combo of Leiter and Rocker is enough, and I'm picking Vanderbilt to win 2 out of 3.
Okay. Well, probably shouldn't have done that. It's probably what I was leaning towards.
Yeah, so that's what I thought. I was like, I don't want Kyle to pick first because I think that one's the safe answer right there.
Yeah. It's the safe answer. I'm going to go Vandy with a sweep, though. I know. It's going to be Oklahoma State's first 3 losses in its new stadium. But I really like Vandy as a team. That's why we have them number 2 in the country. They've only lost once this year. Rocker and Leiter, Oklahoma State's going to have to get one on the third one. But it's going to be a pretty offensive day on that third one, I think. And I trust Vandy.
Something that kind of surprised me too is that Vanderbilt was number 28 in the country in terms of hits. Like, I just kind of got the impression, just watching some of their games, that they weren't super offensive. But
fifth in the country in doubles.
Yeah, it's still a pretty dangerous offense. So we'll see how that one goes. I'm happy I got 2 out of 3 because I think that's a pretty scrappy Oklahoma State team.
Yeah, I still do like Oklahoma State. I wouldn't be surprised if Oklahoma State ended up winning the series, but I couldn't in good conscience pick it.
This will definitely be some of the toughest competition that Leiter's gone up against, so it'll be interesting. I know they went out west, and I can't remember who he pitched against, USC or someone. But, you know, this is kind of, he has the stuff. He's looked really good this year, like really, really good this year. Like, we already had him as our top prospect in this class. And I think some other publications are kind of starting to agree with us that with a upper 90s fastball with movement and a curveball that is at least in the ballpark as good as Rocker's slider, like, I think that, you know, Leiter might be the best pitcher on that staff right now. But Rocker's obviously done it in the College World Series and in Super Regionals, and, you know, he's been there before. So we'll see how both the young arms handle this weekend at Obrate.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting for sure. Your turn.
My turn to pick one. So Louisiana Southern Miss. Let's do a Southern flair. Matt Deggs and the Raging Cajuns have had a pretty good start to the year. They slipped out of the top 25 by just one spot. They're at 26. Felt a little bit bad doing that, but, you know, it was just more of a matter of, well, Texas had a pretty good series at Houston and they kind of jumped, and, you know, they very well could be a top 25 team. Southern Miss, a team that had a close game with Mississippi State in the midweek last week. Mississippi State won that 4-0, I think, and obviously has been a little bit of a giant killer over the years. So I'm going to give you the first stab at this one.
Yeah, this is a little bit tricky. My stats page just gave out on me, but
going in blind with this one.
I'm going in blind. I'm going to say that Louisiana takes it 2 out of 3 at Southern Miss. I do like Southern Miss as a team. I think they've got a good chance to be a tournament team in the Conference USA. They're going to have to beat FAU and those other good teams in their conference. But I'm going to stick with Louisiana 2 out of 3, going in blind though.
I think that's what I would have picked. Had a shot at this, and I was kind of hoping that you would just go with the home team. Louisiana is has a pretty solid pitching staff, 3.25 ERA. They have given up 9 unearned runs. A little bit shaky defense at times. Southern Miss is a tough team to beat at home. So the fact that I'm left with picking Southern Miss to win 2 out of 3 as an option, that's not an option that I feel too bad about. So I'm going to go with that. Southern Miss taking 2 out of 3.
I think that's fair. Yeah, I think they're relatively close in terms of talent. So having the home field advantage is a nice little step up.
We did already have, we saw Louisiana win a road series at Tulane earlier this year. So, you know, we know they can do it on the road.
Yeah, that's true. They're pretty good in the country, 50th in the country in walks, 15th in the country in triples, which is it's pretty fun.
Sounds a little bit of a niche stat.
Yeah, that was just the first one that I found that they were in the low 20s.
All right, everyone.
Sacrifice bunts.
I'll be on the lookout for a bunch of triples this weekend.
They're pretty good at doubles, too. They got 16 doubles. Oh, no, 24 doubles on the season. So they're pretty good at slugging, it looks like. This is Louisiana. So I'm happy with my pick, sticking with it. Can't change it now.
It's in the spreadsheet. It's there for good.
It's there for good. All right, my next pick. I want to make sure we get this one and another one because it's too fun of a series, too high ranked of a series to get, but I hope so. I'm just going to like send it your way and hopefully that you pick the right one.
Received.
Yes. I'm going to go ahead and say BC at Louisville, Boston College at Louisville.
Yeah, that's a good series. One. Boston College coming off a wild weekend on the road, winning a series, Louisville coming off a wild weekend of their own, losing a series. I've liked what I've seen from Boston College. I'd be shocked if Louisville loses the series. There's no way Dan McDonald doesn't have them playing better by the time this weekend comes around. I think Glenn Albanese was out for COVID protocol, so it's been 3 weeks at this point, so I think he should be back. And I have Louisville, let's say, winning 2 out of 3 in this one.
Yeah, I figured you were going to take that. I'm gonna say Louisville sweeps. I don't think I can justify BC winning two out of three, but you took the other one that I wanted. So yeah, I'm gonna say Louisville sweeps.
All right. So looking at the rest, so we have three series left on the board. We're only picking one of them. We have South Carolina at Texas, UConn at Texas Tech, and Arkansas at Louisiana Tech. I'm trying to read your mind here a little bit.
You can just read the spreadsheet.
That's cheating. The one that I wanted to pick, because I think there's some interesting narratives around here, we talked about way back at the beginning of the season, is South Carolina at Texas. The fun fact of this one is that every time Texas has played South Carolina in a year, they've won the national championship. So assuming this weekend happens, congrats to Texas. So let's see what you got.
Yeah, I like Texas's pitching. We kind of talked about it earlier in the podcast a little bit. Texas's pitching is really good, and maybe it's, I mean, everyone talks about how good the SEC arms are, but Ty Madden is a legitimate Friday night ace, first round draft pick. And it kind of, maybe the caliber of talent that South Carolina could expect weekend in and weekend out in the SEC. And they've already played, South Carolina's already played Clemson once this year, so they're kind of ready. Texas kind of faltered in their first real test. I know it was the first weekend, but and maybe they just weren't ready, but the SEC teams were ready. So I'm going to say South Carolina sweeps.
Sweeps? No way.
Yeah, I'm going for it.
Wow. I feel like I have all the options now.
You do.
Yeah, I don't know what direction to go here. So first off, I've tweeted out before on the College Baseball Nation Twitter account, but we were like one home run away from becoming a Wes Clark fan account because he is absolutely ridiculous. He's batting .471 with 8 home runs in 10 games. And to go with that, people have stopped pitching to him. He's 14 walks, which I think leads the country. I haven't checked in a little bit. But, I mean, he has like 10 at-bats fewer than a couple other guys in the lineup because of how many times he's been walked. They're pitching around him, and he's still managing to put up an OPS of like 1,900 or something like that. Let's see, on base, like, yeah.
He's at fourth in the country in walks. 21st in the country in OPS, second in the conference.
Yeah. And, I mean, what's not to like about him? Andrew Eister is also a guy. He's a guy who came out clutch twice against Clemson. I like that, the lineup a lot. I mean, the lineup as a whole was batting over .300. Slugging almost .600, and just they can get to you in a lot of ways. Not stealing a whole lot of bases, really more slugging power first, I guess. So they're not going to sort of chip away at you like a Louisville might. But I mean, they've already put up 19 runs or something against Clemson. Or no, that one wasn't against Clemson. That was against Mercer. Nope, Winthrop. But they've done it. The pitching staff has been super consistent for them. Their three weekend starters all have below 3.5 ERA. I like South Carolina, but I don't like them as much as you. I think I'm taking them 2 out of 3 here.
That's fair. I probably should have taken that, but yeah, the last time I picked against Texas, they failed me. So maybe I should have done that, but I was just too enamored with SC's offense, and their pitching staff is pretty solid too. They're 12th in the country in WHIP, walks plus hits per innings pitched, which is a pretty solid statistic for determining the strength of a pitching staff. That's pretty much every pitcher is responsible for. If you walk somebody or you let up a hit, that's kind of your stat. It's kind of fielding independent. So they're 12th in the country with a 1.04 whip. Love to see that go below one, but still around one is pretty solid.
I mean, yeah, pretty picky to go below one. That's like MLB standards.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And being 12th in the country at 1.04, I think that's pretty solid, obviously. Obviously, they have Wes Clark, so they're number one in the country, or number four in the country in home runs as a team. So, yeah, their offense is pretty insane. So I'm gonna go for the sweep.
They have five pitchers in their bullpen that have. Is that right? Am I looking at this right? They have five guys, yeah, who have 13 combined appearances and a zero ERA.
Oh, wow.
Like the a couple of guys underneath one and a half still too. Like they, I don't know. Like if South Carolina doesn't get the job done this weekend, I don't know. I mean, that's it seems like they have all the right pieces, especially with how Texas's offense has struggled. I mean, that's one thing that even in their weekend series win on the road at Houston, Texas still didn't really quite have, you know, huge offensive power. The games are all going to be in Austin, which is not much of a hitter's park. So it'll be interesting to see if some of the South Carolina sluggers can still clear the fences. But yeah, I mean, you and I agree here. We're both picking South Carolina.
Yeah, and I think their center field is one of the deepest in the country. I remember seeing some stat earlier this year that the first home run hit to center field was just this year in Dishfalk Field. They've renovated it, I don't know, somewhat recently, but like in the last
center.
What?
Like straightaway center to the deepest.
Straightaway center. Yeah. Straightaway center over the batter's eye in center field. But yeah, so it's pretty hard to hit home runs out there, but it's shorter, a little bit shorter in left and right fields. It's also bouncy. It's straight up turf out there, like regular turf. I remember I was at a game last year at Austin, or 2 years ago, and a ball bounced like 10 yards in front of the Texas outfielder and went right over his head, but he was expecting it to go a little bit lower than it was, and it just went right over his head. I think that they'd be used to their own park.
Yeah, we have now made it. Texas turf has made an appearance twice on the podcast now, and we can both go on record saying we're anti-turf, especially in the South.
Yes, turf is bad.
All right, well, Kyle, I think that does it. This is the week that I get on the board. I'm feeling really good about these picks. I like Oregon State sweeping, Vandy 2 out of 3 over Oklahoma State, Southern Miss winning at home, Louisville winning at home 2 out of 3, South Carolina taking 2 out of 3 at Texas. We don't have to go through your picks because they're all garbage and they're going to be wrong. So.
I had to let you have this one week. I was a little bit more bold this week than I usually am, but still like it.
Yeah, I feel like you keep saying you have to let me have stuff, but you still haven't let me win one. So, you know, let's get around to that. I need a W.
That's okay. You don't have to this week.
That's all we have for the podcast this week. Thanks so much for listening to us. You can find us on social media at CollegeBallNat, Twitter and Instagram. You can find us on our website, which is collegebaseball.info. We post all of our content there. Feel free to contact us, leave us a question. We might get around to it on the podcast. Some of today's topics were inspired by people reaching out to us and asking us about stuff. Thanks for listening and have a great week.
Shout out Virginia Tech. Hammer time.